It's Thursday. That means time for this week's Brandfather. And let's face it, it's been a week horribilis, I think, for emerging markets and particularly Brand South Africa among them. I was reading an article in Business Day this morning where Old Mutual Emerging Markets fund manager Feroz Baza was telling the reporter that the Big Green is looking elsewhere in the EM universe for investment opportunities. Think places like Brazil and Mexico. South Africa has become one of the least attractive emerging markets. And we had a note out from Renaissance Capital this morning saying that they believe the South African consumer is actually in a worse state than in prior cycles. And they cite Massmart's inability to show a recovery in sales growth in a lowering inflation environment over the past 6 months as evidence of this. So not good. Over the medium term, there is a lot of headwinds as well. We've got the lower interest rates for longer. We've got credit demand, which has fallen off a cliff. We've got perhaps a glimmer of light in that public sector job growth, or wage growth at least, is above inflation, but that's actually not good for South African taxpayers. So everywhere you look, it feels like I've got to hand out razor blades. Well, I've got Jeremy Sampson, Executive Director of Brand Finance Africa, on the line tonight. Good evening, Jeremy.
Good evening, Michael. What brand of razor blades do you use?
I'm not going to mention the Philips campaign for Nelson Mandela's centenary. Now, one wants to look for positives, but then the mining charter comes out and it's just further evidence that the ANC is economically illiterate.
I couldn't have put it better. They are totally out of touch. Are they a liberation party? What the hell are they? Here we are 22, 23 years on, and they still don't get it. And, you know, here is the Rand back at the level of the Zuma days. And I was hoping the mining charter would be a lot better, but it isn't. And, you know, this is where they've had so many opportunities to get it better, and it still is huge difficulties, huge hurdles to get through.
And that just batters the reputation of the mining sector even further. And it's such a flywheel in the economy. Yes, it's only a contributor on the margin if you look at it, 8% to GDP, where it used to be much, much higher than that. But it still has linkages in manufacturing, in some of the primary sectors as well that supply the mines. If you drive up through Heinertsburg, a lot of the old forestry plantations that used to supply the wood and the timber for the mines have now been replaced with things like avocados and nuts, just because of the decline in our mining industry. So it really is a sad state of affairs. And the ANC is slowly but surely the snake that's eating itself. I saw a very interesting political cartoon this week. There was news out yesterday of another what looks like an assassination. ANC MP Sibusiso Radebe was shot and killed in Joburg. It was supposedly a botched hijacking attempt, but increasingly we're seeing a party at war with itself.
Well, yes. And look at the civil unrest. Look at Van Rienen's pass being closed down the other day. This is a country in turmoil at the moment. And also people are questioning the credibility and the efficiency levels of just about every major organization in this country, questioning whether the new people being put in are fit for purpose. And I'm afraid we've got to ask these hard questions, because at the moment we're not seeing signs that they are indeed fit for purpose. You know, we had Telkom a couple of years ago improving itself quite dramatically. Now it seems to be back in the doldrums. But so many organizations we look around at, and I see in the FM this morning, they're also asking, is the new Eskom CEO fit for purpose? Now, we've talked about Eskom so many times, but it's so inefficient in so many different ways. Someone's got to take an axe to that organization and knock it into shape.
Well, from load shedding to road shedding, I think Mike Schussler is calling it now, road shedding in reference to the fact that we now block our major arterial roads in protest. But he could quite easily have been referring to Transnet, because the reports that are emerging from Transnet now indicate that it could be actually far worse than the plunder that we've seen at Eskom.
Well, absolutely. Again, some of the coverage in the weekend newspapers about the figures who are involved. I see Saika at last, and I say at last, I should perhaps say at last about 10 times, has put his head above the parapet and named someone as to be put in front of a disciplinary. No, and that's, I think, a former Transnet gentleman who then moved to Eskom. He's not alone. And I think this is just the thin end of the wedge. Hopefully faster and faster, and let's get our facts straight. But when you think of the figures, the money that is being wasted by Eskom, by Transnet, by the other SOEs, when the country, especially the poor people, are finding it incredibly difficult. And it's not just the poor people. Everyone's saying, my goodness, the cost of living is going right up at the moment. What's going on in this country? Look at the price of petrol, for instance.
Well, look at the price of petrol and the fact that we now have to pay more at the pump. People would argue, well, that's partly a result of global factors like the rising oil price, but also the fact that we seek to fill our fiscal hole by increasing fuel levy taxes and other components of the petrol price. So one cannot be ignorant of the fact that it is also a result of poor governance. And back to Transnet, I mean, inflating a tender to build those 1,064 locomotives by 15 billion rand. I mean, these numbers are eye-wateringly large and we've almost become desensitized to them. But that is an absolute scandal. SAICA, though, taking aim at Eskom CFO Anuj Singh, as you say, at last. But for me, SAICA still has a long way to go to regain a lot of professional trust and integrity that it has lost. It's a bit of a curate's egg for me.
I think this is a warning to all professional bodies that they've got to remain relevant and they've got to do their job of keeping up standards. And if people actually aren't able to do that or transgress, they've got to be held accountable. So it's not just SAICA. But I see also there's a story saying that there are members of SAICA who are saying they actually want to withdraw from SAICA because SAICA is sullying their reputations. Well, what an indictment of a professional organization that a few years ago held its hail, well, it's globally was actually revered, wasn't it? I'm not sure it's ever was ranked as high as it should have been, but now we're seeing everything is falling apart. And who's taking leadership? Who's actually controlling it? I see actually they've got an acting CEO at the moment.
They do have an acting CEO. What's happened to Lindy Engelbrecht?
Lindy Engelbrecht, I understand, has been headhunted to go overseas, to move to London. She was sitting on a global body representing SAICA, and as a result of that, the contacts she made and the people she worked alongside, she has been asked to move across to London, and I believe that's happening very, very shortly. In fact, her whole family is moving with her.
Corporate governance expert Linda De Beer, who sits on the King Committee, stood up at a recent Courageous Conversations event that was hosted by SAICA and held forth on some of the issues that have been bubbling under and have finally bubbled over in the industry. They haven't conducted themselves with the level of integrity that chartered accountants would expect of their mother body. And a body like SAICA is there to protect the integrity of the profession. It's there to ensure that the members who work very hard to qualify as CAs can ensure that the profession is held in the highest regard and esteem. And if it doesn't act against members who breach its codes of conduct, then it really is a world of harm. Now, reading through the FM this morning, a story struck me around the power of brands in the fast food space, the QSR, quick service restaurant space. KFC, still the undisputed champion in South Africa. Its customers consume 2.2 million chickens a week.
And when you look at the revenues, 8.71 billion rands. The runner-up, if I can put it that way, is McDonald's at 4.34 billion. And then we get to Nando's at 2.33, and you have a whole crowd of them. But this is a sector that is incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. It's interesting how they've adjusted as well their offerings to today's needs, both demographically and what we've got in our back pocket, as it were, to spend. But KFC, the domination they have on the market is so huge, and it shows they've stayed relevant. You know, it's a great, great brand, keeps reinventing itself, and is totally dominating the market.
And the fact that other chicken brands really haven't been able to compete. Now, from chicken to Russia with love, Jeremy, the World Cup has actually led to a surge in the use of the dating app Tinder. That's according to the Moscow Times, reporting that one of Russia's four biggest phone operators, MTS, has had an 11-fold increase in match day Tinder traffic near stadiums and fan zones in Moscow. Well, when in Russia?
Well, and this is where they talk about all these sporting events, the greater use of Durex or whatever. And it is interesting how, you know, when you actually watch the game, you know, and I was watching last night the Spain-Iran game, the passion, the energy of those fans, and you know, this is after all for 90 minutes, so what are they doing before and what are they doing after? What are they doing once they wait for the next game in a couple of days, hopefully. So it's a huge opportunity and a huge showplace for Russia, and they seem to be taking it with both hands.
I must agree with you. I think that the shots that we've seen of Russia, the shots we've also seen of the various fans, the Senegalese, the Japanese, cleaning up after themselves in the in the stadia, fantastic. I think I even heard a vuvuzela or two, or 2,000 it sounded like, in that Spain-Iran game last night. So there are still little dividends for the World Cup that we hosted 8 years ago. And speaking of sport, Jeremy, I was had a very interesting interview with the Minister of Tourism, Derek Harnacombe, on Tuesday night on the tourist numbers, which really looked like a bit of a horror show. There are some interesting statistical anomalies in those. He was really disappointed with the way we handled Day Zero and the branding of that and how it's impacted Cape Town. But he's really chuffed with the way the Springboks under Siya Kolisi are starting to unite the nation under a winning brand of rugby, I might add. But it does mean there's no such thing as a dead rubber against Jones's battered and wilting roses this weekend. Where's your money?
Well, I think we have little to celebrate at the moment, quite bluntly, in South Africa. But this is one of the things, big time, to celebrate. I think everyone expected England to bounce back big time in Bloemfontein last Saturday, and they didn't. I thought in the second half they had no ideas, there was no creativity, and I thought, my goodness, where's that will to win? Hopefully Eddie Jones has ignited it, because I'm wondering if the main problem isn't in the head rather than the physical side of the game.
Andy Good, a former England number 10, has written a column, I think it was in The Guardian, I can't remember which British paper, but echoing those sentiments, what's happening to the English team culture? Well, one thing we do know is that the Springbok culture is improving. Siya Kolisi took the team down to Robben Island yesterday, and they spent a lot of time in Madiba's cell and just remembering in this centennial year what Nelson Mandela stood for. And he stood for non-racialism, and I think it's such an important message at a time, Jeremy, where if you're on Twitter, there are so many race trolls there from all groups in South Africa trying to bait each other. And I really do think we need to remember that we're all South African, especially in the centennial year of Nelson Mandela. And if the Springboks continue to lead from the front, then hopefully they can do what our politicians are clearly trying to pull in the opposite direction when it comes to uniting South Africans. So I'm still putting my money on the Springboks this weekend, even though it's a dead rubber. I think Russia Rasmus and Siya Kolisi have they've got a good culture going there, and long may it last.
Couldn't agree more with you. I think that the rugby that they're playing is very exciting. It's going to pull the crowds back. You know, the last couple of years, I've seen so many empty seats in the big gaping stadium. And I see that people like Western Province are making huge losses at the moment. So let's hope that the Springboks, and well done Rassie Erasmus, the whole team will pull it back together again. But these are the little things we've got to celebrate. I think there are so many other things at the moment that need the attention of our leaders to take us back to being a winning nation. And as you say, we are all on the same team. People seem to forget that.
That was Jeremy Sampson, Executive Director of Brand Finance Africa, the Brand Father here on Classic Business. Where is Cyril Ramaphosa? Has anyone seen him?